and welcome to the Latest Sounds of Sport podcast. I'm your host Matt Solomon, and today I'm delighted to be joined by James Moran. So James completed his PhD in nutrition and rugby. He's worked at multiple different clubs, including most recently the Bristol Bears, and he's currently working with England Rugby. So who better today to discuss how you can improve your rugby performance than James? So James, welcome to the Science of Sport podcast. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Hello, Matt. I hope you're well, mate. Long time since we last caught up.
It's been a bit. I can look back and check it in the show notes, but it's been definitely a couple of years. So it's fantastic to have you back on, of course. Can you give us a quick update as to who you are and what you've been up to since the last time?
Yeah, so I guess since the last time, if it's a couple of years, I left England football. I was a nutritionist there with my colleague, Dr. Chris Rosimus, and I got myself back into rugby union. So I've now been at Bristol Bears for three seasons, leading the nutrition program there. And during that time, I also took on a contract with the RFU with the Red Roses. So I worked with the women's team for 18 months, did two Six Nations with them and supported them for their World Cup in New Zealand. And then alongside that, I've had some good successes with my boxers. So Chris Eubank Jr., Harlem Eubank, Adam Azeem and Chris Billum-Smith. So there's a couple of like world title wins and defences in there with some European titles, which has been good. And then I guess more recently in the last couple of months, I've taken on the role as the lead nutritionist with the England Rugby Senior Men's Team with the RFU. So back in at the RFU alongside Bristol Bears.
Absolutely excellent, mate. And I can imagine that's an amazing experience too. But it obviously that gives us loads of scope today to discuss rugby and how nutrition can influence performance there. But like going back before that, all of those great experiences, well, you did your PhD in exactly this, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I studied, I had 9 years at Liverpool John Moores University and very fortunate to be supervised by Professor Graham Close and Professor James Morton at the time. And then my PhD was part funded with the university. And the first year was Widnes Vikings, which is a rugby league team in the northwest of England, followed by year two, year three with Warrington Wolves. So, yeah, I was fortunate, I guess, that all of my participants on my whole PhD were professional rugby league players, where we looked at kind of body composition change, applied physiology, and what might be best termed the energetic cost of rugby match play.
Absolutely excellent. So with that in mind, right, can you take us to kind of the most basic level and just talk us through the importance of nutrition for rugby players? Like what does that do in terms of making a difference for them?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fundamental. Nutrition forms the basis of any rugby player that wants to grow, develop and perform to their best, I guess, from a young academy player into that senior player. You have to focus on an element of carbohydrate periodization to make sure that they're fueling for the demands of training correctly. And you'll often hear the term fuel for the work required. And I like to add in kind of eating with intent. So we're consuming the right amount of carbohydrates for the right training session at the right time of day. And there's really you're doing that to make sure you're fueling that session correctly, but also we're not over consuming or under consuming so that we might, you know, drop weight when we don't want to, / put unwanted gains in mass on when we shouldn't be doing as well. And then, of course, protein is going to be fundamental for any rugby player to grow that muscle mass and to recover properly from heavy training days and match play. And I guess we like to kind of sit our players in and around that 2 gram per kilo mark and keep that pretty standard across the week. And then educating the players on healthy fats as well. You know, what are healthy fats to be consuming? What are the ones that we want to stay away from? And then trying to wrap that in over the course of the 7 day week is probably where the challenge lies for a lot of rugby players, if I'm honest. Having that understanding and education of how to consume the right nutrition at the right time of day. And then I think, you know, if we then lead into the gameplay, match play, we've got boys that are eating 6 gram, maybe 7 gram per kilo of carbohydrate leading into match play. And if you're a 100 kilo player, you're looking at about 600 grams of carbs, which the classic kind of reference point is 12 jacket potatoes worth of carbohydrates the day before a game.
That's a lot of jacket potatoes, mate.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, they need it. They're fueling for, at the moment, it's test match and, you know, Premier League or Premiership rugby as well. And then the recovery post-match is just as important, especially when you've got those congested windows and the boys need to recover from both exercise-induced muscle damage, but also the uniqueness of rugby is that there's a lot of impact-induced muscle damage, which results in that inflammation and muscle soreness as well.
So that's a quick rundown of obviously some macronutrient stuff. So when we're looking at that training week, which you mentioned, obviously you're going to want to plan how you're going to hit those different macronutrients at different times. So can you talk us through how that might work in relation to, let's say you have the match on a Saturday, how that might look starting on Monday as to how you can adjust those different macronutrients?
Yeah, I mean, if I take you back to kind of club rugby, if you're playing on the Saturday, then, you know, your Friday would be that captain's run. So Friday is always going to be the high carb day, where the focus predominantly should be on carbohydrate intake to fuel for the work required tomorrow. You'd also have high carb breakfast and pre-match meal where possible, but there's also an awareness piece that some players struggle to eat a lot of food on game day. So you have to work with them on an individual level to try and get that in maybe from liquid form instead. So then Thursday normally would be a bit of a lighter training day slash a recovery day where they're off and they're, you know, let's rest up at home. And then you would have the start of the week, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where they're going to be the heavier training days. So if I was to color code the days, then it would almost be like if high carb is a green color, it would be Monday, Tuesday, heavy training days. Wednesday, you might have a lighter training day, which would be maybe an orange, which would be moderate carbohydrates. Thursday, red, so low carbohydrate, and then your Friday, Saturday greens for high carbohydrate. So that's probably how you would color code day-to-day periodization. But then within the day, you've also then got meal-to-meal periodization. So on a Monday, if you look at the majority of clubs would kind of get the boys in between 7-8 in the morning for breakfast, and then the bulk of your training is actually happening between, let's say, 8 o'clock in the morning, whether they might be in the gym, to the field session, which will either be done before lunch or just after lunch. So the majority of your training day, your expenditure is going to be morning to maximum mid-afternoon. The rest of your day then, and there was some really nice research actually done in rugby players looking at the sedentary behaviour that rugby players actually then go through when they're not in the club. So, and I reflect back on conversations with a lot of the players that I work with is, you know, what is it you're doing post-training? Now, in the winter, a lot of them are just going home and it's feet up and it's FIFA, it's COD, it's Game of Thrones, whatever it might be, but they actually become quite sedentary. You then have some of them that might go out and walk their dog. So there's a consideration there for the energetic cost of that. In the summer, you get a lot of them go on the golf course. So there's an expenditure there that you have to be aware of. But the point I'm trying to make is that in that Monday alone, you might have a lot of your carbohydrate intake in and around the morning lunchtime to fuel and recover from the training demands of the training. But then as you get into the evening, that's where you're going to have to periodize your carbohydrates to be lower. Otherwise, you run the risk of boys over consuming carbohydrates and in excess of kind of calories from carbs when they don't need it.
And you mentioned like a high, medium, low kind of thing. What does that mean in terms of, you mentioned grams per kilo earlier. So let's say you've got a 100-kilo rugby player. What does a high, medium and low day then look like for them in terms of like working out exactly what's necessary?
Yeah, good question. So like a high carb day, if it's leading into a game for us, and me and Professor Graham Close wrote an article on this, it would be 6 gram per kilo leading into a game, focus on the game. If it's a green day, but more of a heavy training day, you might want to focus maybe that 4 to 5 gram per kilo. If it's a moderate training day, then it might be 3 to 4 gram per kilo. And if it's a light rest recovery day, then you might just focus on that 2 to 3 gram per kilo. Now, bear in mind that if you're 100 kilos, although 2 to 3 grams per kilo sounds low, it's still 200 to 300 grams of carbs, which is 6 jacket potatoes worth potentially of carbohydrates that day. So we're definitely not encouraging players to go ketogenic and go really, really low carb, but it's just an appreciation of, look, if you haven't got anything on today and the only expenditure you've got is taking the dog out in the morning and going to the coffee shop with your missus, we've got to be smart here about not over consuming today. And I think that's where it, you know, certainly for us at Bristol, if you're at a club where you've got very good food provision with a great chef, then we can control that quite well when we're at the club. But the reality is half of the week, if not more, the boys are fending for themselves. And that's where the education is so important. And we've done, we had a very good process at Bristol Bears where we did this kind of reheat and eat, which was an option for the players actually to opt in and say, yeah, I would love an evening meal made up for me as well. And so whatever we had at lunch, we would then make up extra for the players so that they could take that with them post-training. And actually their evening meals catered for. They don't have to worry about it. Where we took that to the next level was that I would work closely with the chef to say, right, James needs a minimizer meal. So his carbohydrate content in that meal needs to be 30 grams or less. We've got Matt here that needs a maintainer meal. So he's going to have 40 to 50 grams of carbohydrates. And then we've got Owen here who's trying to gain, and he's going to have 60 grams and above of carbohydrates. So we'd actually work with a chef to periodize the carbohydrate intake in the evening meal so that the players didn't really have to think about it. Of course, there was the education behind it, but for us, that took away one of the biggest hurdles of players being tired, not having the right food in the house and can't be bothered to cook. We've basically done it for them.
So that sounds super interesting. I imagine there's a lot of, especially the high-level players who are getting a lot of money, they can bring in a chef or whatever and get people to do that for them. But yeah, I can also see a scenario when they get home and their partner's there like, oh, did you get me one then? And they're sat there, partner's on a muscle gain for a 100-kilo rugby player meal or just like shoveling in pasta.
You're exactly right, Matt. And it was a question we had from a couple of players. And so do you know what we did? We said, well, look, if your partner wants to get involved, then like let's create an extra meal. So at times we had some players that were consuming a gainer meal, and then the partners wanted a minimizer meal.
Yeah.
So we catered for it because we were like, okay, if this is going to help you and it's going to help body composition change, it's going to help you recover properly from training, we're all for it. So yeah, we did cater for that situation as well.
I love that. I really like the holistic viewpoint of like, there's a social element to eating food. So you go home, you don't want to eat your microwave dinner by yourself. You want to do that with your partner or family or whoever's with you.
Yeah.
I like the fact that the club are willing to facilitate that above just saying, look, let's not take the mick here. We've only got so much pasta and chicken.
Do you know what? Something else that we added in, and I can't take credit for this. This was kind of driven by members of staff at the club. But it was so good because it really got players to buy into to us and nutrition, was that if there was a player who had just had a kid, then we would send 2 weeks worth of food to the father and the mother in the first 2 weeks of having the baby, because anyone that's had a kid knows that nutrition goes out the window because you're so tired. So we would again kind of catch that issue, and we would provide the food. So many players loved that and they really appreciated it. And likewise, if a player gets injured and they're immobile, they've had their ACL done, you know, they've just had their shoulder repaired, they can't cook. And if the wife's at work and the partner's not around, then what are they going to eat? Do you know what I mean? They can't cook at home. So again, we would provide the first 2 weeks of food, at least just to get them going. Let's get some good nutrition in. You've just woke up from an operation. We know how important this is right now. So let's support you from that point of view. And that went down really well with a lot of players.
I'm very briefly and rudely interrupting James to make sure that you are up to date on the Science of Sport Coach Academy. Now, Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you're enjoying today's podcast, you can get some more great sports science information by hitting the link in the show notes in just a few minutes' time. And that link will get you into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. So hit that link in just a few minutes' time.
I really like that. I think it gives you a good feeling as a player that the club's supporting you, but also it forms those nice habits early. Yeah. And you can just keep those habits rolling as opposed to being like, right, okay, well, it's going to be McDonald's for the first 2 weeks and then you're playing catch-up for the next 8 months of your operation with a McDonald's addiction.
Yeah.
When it comes to then individualizing, you've mentioned weight, obviously, so grams per kilo for protein and carbohydrates and obviously energy expenditure. Is there any other individualization that occurs? So I can imagine that at the top level, you're looking at taking like a blood analysis, for example, looking at some multivitamin stuff. Is there any other individualization outside of just the standard macronutrient stuff?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just to go into a bit more detail on the macros. So the individual strategy is important for everyone because everyone within the squad will have their own personal goals. And you could probably best break it down into those three groups of players that want to maintain weight, players that actually are growing and they want to put weight on, and you want that to be good weight, i.e. skeletal muscle mass and not fat mass. And then you've got boys that might have come in a little bit too heavy or they're not as functional as they want to be, and then you've got to drop that weight off. And again, you want it to be a healthy weight that's coming off, and again, they're not under eating and losing too much muscle. So that's where some of my work in the boxing comes into play really easily with those lads. Outside of that, you've then got your individuals who might be injured, they've come out of operation, or they're going into surgery. Is there anything we can do pre-operation to put them in the best possible condition? You've of course got your dietary requests and you know, some of the common allergies that you have to consider. And then the more that I'm working at the elite level, what I'm beginning to see kind of more of is the day of the game, and you know, the nerves of game day, the adrenaline of game day, the excitement of game day, and the impact that can have on somebody's habitual eating strategies. And that's been kind of quite interesting to work with. And that, I guess, they are individual cases, because you'll have some players that have no problem eating on game day. You'll have other players that really struggle to eat on the day of the game. And so working with them to say, right, let's formulate an individual plan for you to make sure we're still hitting 200 grams of carbohydrate the morning of a game, but it's now from other sources other than your classic big bowl of porridge. So yeah, that's been an interesting one. And then we do have a player at England that's got diabetes. And so first time ever in my career that I've worked with an athlete with diabetes. And so working with him has been a really good lesson for me, and starting to read a little bit more about what actually impacts sugar levels and the impact that adrenaline can have versus excitement versus lifting weights versus cardio based exercise. So that's been a challenge, but really interesting.
I can imagine. Yeah, that's a really different world when you kind of get into that scenario. You're like, well, wait a minute, like, we can't give him too much, but we need to give enough to fuel, and we can't give him too little. So it's always kind of like Goldilocks principle of like, how do we get the sweet spot more accurately for someone when their health is not a risk necessarily, but their health is at stake as well.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. And it's been interesting. It's been a learning curve. Look, I've never worked with someone like that before, so I'm learning as I'm reading, basically. And then I think the best way to learn in a situation like that is to really understand it from the athlete's viewpoint, because the athlete in mind has, you know, he's got years and years and years of experience of dealing with it. But what I've kind of noticed when I'm doing my research is that there's not actually too much published in it and in that area. So it might be something that we look at kind of trying to do a little bit of research in as well.
I mean, I'm in the same situation. One of my guys has got diabetes, and you've not got a large case study a large cohort to be looking at. Maybe you can get a case study out of it. I mean, I know at our training center, there's two, and you're kind of like, oh, that's all right, but we're never going to get an N equals 20 interesting case. And you can never normalize all of the things that are going on. Two different types of training, how you do it, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, when little case studies like that are available, then fantastic. Yeah. It's that's obviously some individualization stuff, and I really like the way you kind of remove the barriers as opposed to, yeah, directly solving every single problem every time. You kind of work with the athletes to remove barriers. But when it comes to match day, right? So obviously we discussed kind of the general week, but when it comes to match day, what might a day look like for a professional rugby player when you look at specifically what's going to be on their plate, right? So we've discussed kind of the macronutrient intake, but what is going to be on their plate, breakfast, snack, pre-match, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's it varies is the honest answer. Like I said, some players enjoy to eat, other players don't. Some players fine to drink their carbs, other players prefer to have the food and feel like their stomach's full. But, you know, some typical things that you'd see at breakfast are going to be pancakes, big bowls of porridge with banana, you know, fruit smoothies, eggs on toast always is there. Some players will just have a normal kind of, not a fry up, but, you know, they're having beans, they're having eggs, they're having bread, they're having avocado, salmon. We will always try and have available high carbohydrate based drinks. So carbohydrate combined with electrolytes and put them in areas where players are going to see it most often. So down at breakfast, you know, you might have some in the physio room. You might have some where their morning tablets are, but you're trying to kind of utilize that nudge psychology and that nudge behavior. And then pre-match meal is an interesting one because, you know, the classics of porridge appears again, but then you've got the pastas, rices. We try and keep the meats really clean and simple. So just chicken with salmon fillets, remain away from kind of your tough red meats. And then a lot of juices. So, you know, apple juice, orange juice, pineapple juice, you know, you can get some decent amount of carbohydrates just from drinking a couple of glasses of pure juice. So, yeah, it's different. It's very hard to say this is what a rugby player intakes because it depends on who the player is and how they're feeling. But a build-up of most of them foods is what you would normally see.
And then what about after the game, right? So I know traditionally in maybe potentially the lower levels especially, that's going to be 10 pints and a kebab. So like at the elite level, maybe let's assume it's not the case, but maybe that's not the case. What does a post-match meal look like?
Yeah, so look, from an evidence-based point of view, what you would love your players to consume is...
That's so political, mate. You've cited that really well.
In an ideal situation, it would be 1 gram per kilo of carbohydrate for the first 4 hours post-match. So how best to get that in is going to be normally from a recovery shake. So loads of different companies out there that do these, but you know, you would like to see a recovery shake that's maybe a 3-to-1 ratio of carbohydrate to protein, with protein being anywhere 20 to maybe 40 grams. If I give you our best case scenario at Bristol Bears, we used to have a recovery shake. We used to have a chocolate flavored milk at 500 mil. So that would be about 50 grams of carbs and about 20 grams of protein. It tasted incredible. So the boys would love ripping into that. We would give them a couple of the cherry gels to kind of help with that initial phase of soreness and inflammation. And then we would give them a homemade Greek yogurt with a berry compote, some granola and a little bit of honey. And then where we found good uptake was creating a burrito style wrap with rice wrap, some chicken, avocado, you know, a couple of leaves in there, that sort of style of burrito. So we would try and hit them with that in the changing room where we could. And then if they got that in within the first couple of hours, like that's a really good start to your recovery. And then what you do find, as you've said, you know, if it was a great win, there might be a couple of beers that are present. And is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, everyone can have their opinion on that. I've seen positives to having beers in changing rooms for the psychology side of it, and well deserved if it's been a big win. But you know, we also know that one beer could maybe lead into two, then three, and then it might be a problem for actually promoting some of that inflammation that you don't want to see. So that would be the ideal situation. And then I always try and get the boys to eat like a king on a recovery day for breakfast in particular, because best case scenario, they nail that post-match recovery. They'll then go to bed. They'll have potentially 7 to 9, maybe 10 hours of sleep where no nutrition has gone in. So then what goes in at breakfast is really important, because that's the next meal that can help the recovery on that match day plus one day. So when I first started out in the rugby league days, I actually used to encourage players to go quite light on that meal. But the reality is they're still trying to recover. So eat like a king, get loads of good nutrition in. You know, if they're going to go for the poached eggs, bit of sourdough, avocado, they're out with the boys having a coffee, then I would always encourage actually maybe like a porridge with loads of fruit in there as well and some Greek yogurt, just to kind of double up at that breakfast intake. If you do that, that's a pretty good recovery.
Absolutely excellent. So James, that's really interesting. Thank you so much. Where can people find a little bit more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, so I guess Instagram, Moorhen Performance. I'm on LinkedIn as well. And then the recent kind of project that I set up was the Performance Nutrition Network, which is a community of performance nutritionists and people that work in nutrition and practitioners across the globe. So that's where I'm active most days at the moment.
Absolutely excellent. Massive thanks, mate. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to speaking again soon.
All good. Cheers, Matt.
See you, buddy.
Take care.
And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks to James for all of his hard work on today's podcast. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you did at home too. Before you leave, I want to point you in the direction of the Science and Sport Coach Academy. And the Coach Academy is an overgrowing library of sports science courses, which are broken down into bite-sized chunks. So if you've enjoyed today's podcast and you want to get your hands on some more great sports science information, all you have to do is hit the link in the show notes and you get into the Coach Academy completely for free for the next 7 days. What's more, every time you complete one of the courses, you'll get a certificate of completion which will prove your ongoing education. And if you have enjoyed today's podcast, it'd be fantastic if you could recommend it to a coach, a colleague, an athlete, or a friend. That means that we can keep bringing the best possible guests and best possible content. And that's it. Once again, a massive thanks from me and Matt Solomon for Science and Sport. And I'll speak to you next week.